Well, good morning. 6:06 on the first day of June, believe it or not. And we've got a couple of candidates coming on today. Jeff Steinborn. And in addition, I believe that James Dickens is coming on. So he should be here around 6:30, all things being equal. So we will not have the traditional weird news. Although we'll throw some weird news in for you. there has been some weather moving through here for the last couple of days, and we're supposed to get a warming trend and drying trend coming in over the next few days through this week. But at the same time, we're supposed to also be getting some showers. So just to let you know that. Now, I had mentioned yesterday that we usually do our Glenn Beck watch, that Glenn Beck has been suspended by his cable or, excuse me, satellite radio contract, his Sirius XM. So just to let you know that there, you know, I was thinking about this, and then in the midst of all of this excitement and the strange campaigns that we're having, he got involved up to his neck and was propping for Ted Cruz, as everybody realizes. And the upshot on that is that when he got his guy did not win. And so he is, and I've got a little clip on this for you, but so Beck's guy. So here's what I want to ask you, and everybody's been listening and watching Glenn Beck, and he's, you know, showed up at campaign events and was very upset when his own candidate did not win. He repeatedly claimed that, God was demanding that people vote and support for Cruz and giving many prophetic announcements. Now, having said that, he then had this very, very weird event where last week, had somebody come on his show and say that the guy on the show, his name was Thor, had stated something along the lines of the fact that if there was what he called a extinction level event, whatever that's supposed to be, this guy's a novelist, but it's extinction level event that we would have to take out Donald Trump. And people took that to mean that he was calling for, or at least accepting, that he was going to be killed, that somebody would come along and, you know, exterminate Glenn Beck. So anyway, all right, so let me hold on a second and get this. Got a couple of clips playing here for you. But anyway, it was just weird, you know. So what I would like to ask, and I know there's people that will listen to the Glenn Beck show after this, you think he's losing his mind? Here's Anderson Cooper.
The things about the divide between Donald Trump, the Republican Party establishment, such as it is, we should point out that a gap has existed between the establishment and what you might call insurgent candidates, going back to Barry Goldwater in 1964. However, not since Goldwater has the...
Well, this isn't the clip I was looking for. The clip I'm looking for is... That one is where Trump is saying... Or Beck is saying that Trump is going to be the next president. Here is something from Sirius announcing his departure.
Sirius XM However, comments made recently by a guest on the independently produced program in the company's judgment, that would be SiriusXM, may be reasonably construed by some to have been advocating harm against an individual currently running for office, which SiriusXM as a company cannot and will not condone. For that reason, the Glenn Beck program is suspended from the Patriot Channel for the coming week. SiriusXM is committed, robust, yet responsible political conversation and believes this action reflects those values. So here's what's happening. The Glenn Beck program for this week has been temporarily suspended. That normally follows Breitbart News Daily. It's going to be replaced by the SiriusXM show, one of our oldest shows going, not our oldest talent.
All right. So that's just an announcement from that company. But I mean, I think it's serious. And what I'd like to know is if you guys think that Glenn Beck is losing it because, you know, I mean, to stand up and say I'm speaking for God is one thing. To advocate, to say that you, if someone was on a stage with you, you would stab them if there was a knife, is not really Christian. And to let somebody else come on at your show and say that we may need to eliminate him with a power beyond the Congress, we may have to take it into our own hands, is a terrible thing to say. So, I mean, is the guy losing his mind? Because I could see him lose his empire. You know, he's put a lot of money into this empire. Now the empire is, they had to take out a loan to save his business. I can't imagine his ratings are up. He just fired 40 people. He's not really been paying attention to his network. And doing broadcasting is a lot of work behind the scenes, and you've got to be present. And so he was out supporting Cruz. Everybody knows how that went. And now it's like he's throwing a tantrum. He couldn't get his way. He couldn't get Ted Cruz into the White House. And I mean, could you imagine how powerful? I mean, I'm sure, I'm not saying that this is the reason that he did it, but can you imagine if Ted Cruz did get into the White House, you know, let's say Hillary fell apart, Ted Cruz gets into the White House, and can you imagine how powerful Glenn Beck would be? He would be like America's top journalist for 4 years, 8 years or whatever. That would have saved his empire, I'm sure. So maybe, I'm not saying this is his reasoning. I'm not saying he's not sincere when he talks for God. But is it possible that he was doing that because he saw it as a shot to save his empire? And then when he met Mark Zuckerberg, who's worth, you know, Zuckerberg is worth, what, $25, $40 billion? A tiny drop out of that could save Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck's net worth is $100 million, and I'm sure that he doesn't want to lose his net worth for his channel, his empire. So anyway, here's a little bit from Glenn Beck.
New book, Foreign Agent, that is coming out in a couple of weeks.
This is the conversation that started Glenn Beck to being suspended from satellite radio.
You can pre-order it now at bradthor.com. Brad is a very good friend of mine and sometimes a little shy about his opinions.
Almost like a wallflower.
Almost. He keeps them to himself. We have to pry things out of him. Mm. Welcome to the program, Brad Thor. How are you?
Yeah, I'm ready to be shy. Get off my back, Pat!
So Brad, how are things shaping up for you? Because we have, you know, and I don't know if you feel this way, but we were wrong about this election from the get-go. We thought anyone but Trump would win because there's just no way he would be able to. And so we've come to the place now where we think he's going to win, mainly because we've been so wrong about him. But we're still getting massive blowback because we won't get into the boat, which we all as an audience, when we thought it was Jeb Bush, we all as an audience said, we're not going to do that. Don't get into that boat. Don't. What they're going to come back to you and say, you're going to wreck the election. You're going to get Hillary elected. We promise each other we will not do that. We won't sell out our values. And yet we're getting hammered because we're selling out, quote, our values by not selling out our values. How are you?
And I agree. And I was on record well over a year and a half ago saying, probably even 2 years, The Blaze did an article about it where I said, if Jeb Bush ends up being the nominee, I will never vote Republican again. My opposition to Jeb Bush, though, was that it was going to be more elitist status quo in D.C.
All right. That's the start of it. This is a 14-minute clip here. So let me just kind of cut to the chase. And just, well, anyway, I'll take a break and come back and find that. I don't want to torture you with that. But anyway, I thought it was interesting I'm not saying that he's going to end up in an insane asylum. I will say this. There was a time that I wanted to be involved with what Glenn Beck was doing. So I figured I could find a place writing or broadcasting or whatever. And, you know, these guys didn't show the slightest amount, and maybe I didn't present myself the right way, but I was doing some writing for a couple of books that he had put out. I didn't get any acknowledgement. I have never been paid for it. And I'm not saying it's a scam, but I wanted to trade what they owed me for an opportunity to present some stuff. And now I am so glad that I don't have anything to do with those guys, because I really wonder, and I'm not talking about Glenn Beck's talent, which is undeniable, but I mean, where is this guy headed? Where is it headed? Where is it headed that, you know, he's advocating for a candidate. He gets heavily involved in the campaign. He frequently and repeatedly says that God is telling him stuff. And he's become like a national prophet. And then things start to turn sour. And the candidate is not looking that good. And Glenn Beck is not looking good. And so at some point he says, if I had a chance, I'd stab Donald Trump. And then beyond that, beyond this weird thing now, he's had other people come on his show saying that they, you know, we may have to kill, basically, in so many words, we may have to kill Donald Trump, because if the Senate or Congress can't do anything about it. So, I mean, look, who looks crazier, Glenn Beck or Donald Trump? Who looks more out of control? And does Glenn Beck hurt or harm Cruz in the future? I mean, and then Glenn Beck is like kissing the rear end of Zuckerberg, telling him how great he is and everything. It's just, I don't know, where does this guy end up? I mean, is he just going to accept second place status? When he was on Fox News, there was nobody hotter. And now look at this. So let's take a break and we'll come back. And I've got a little bit of weather for you. 620 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. And I have the text machine with me. And there was a gift of 20 texts in there. 805-6180 is your text line. We'll be right back. Okay, so I told you, or I've been telling you about this incredible weather, and you've seen it in the news in Texas, and I've got some clips here from the Weather Channel. Who knows when this flooding is going to stop in Texas? It just seems cyclical.
Has just seemingly been a magnet in the month of May for a lot of rainfall, and these are the images to prove it. Look, this gal's standing in what's probably her backyard. Hate to see that, and guys, really not a good idea. You don't know what's out there in that water, but a lot of cleanup in so many spots in Texas. Now, we certainly had our very hard hit areas. The majority of the Lone Star State will be hit again as we rev up Tuesday afternoon into Tuesday evening, and we've got additional rain, as you can see, very widespread across the state on Wednesday. By the way, it's going to be a bit windy in the panhandle on Wednesday. We're talking 20 plus mile per hour winds as well as Thursday, not to mention a bit cooler than average, about 10 degrees cooler than average. On Thursday, at least the northern third of Texas gets away from some of that rainfall, but we've got a ways to go. In terms of the additional rainfall amounts we will see during this stretch in time post-Memorial Day, a lot of locations will pick up another 2 to 3 inches with some isolated higher amounts.
And San Antonio is supposed to have 3 to 5 inches coming up, so it's really incredible. All right, here's a little bit on the tragedy, the six dead and the Texas flood event. And last Friday, on the outskirts of Houston, or really it was a very wide area, probably 100 square miles, they had 19 inches of rain. It was really amazing. All right, so here is his a little bit on that.
Dead and four missing due to that extreme flooding you're looking at. This is taking place all over Texas right now. Pretty much the entire state is under a flash flood watch. It's not over. It has been a wet month, extremely wet month for May, and June is not starting any better. Plenty of rains in the forecast, here's what we've been looking at through Maine. This is just extreme, with the heaviest rain concentrated from Austin down to the south and off to the east. So a lot of these rivers now, they are cresting at record level, and the rain is still coming down. So there's that low spinning over Texas. It keeps feeding in rain band after rain band. So what we'll be looking at is additional rain in the forecast, widespread 3 to 5 inches, isolated we could get 5 to 8, and even in some cases higher than that.
All right, we do have a caller. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, I was wondering if you could find out something for me from the illustrious city.
All right.
They have sprinklers going 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, down in the Arroyo off of Foothills and Roadrunner. And, you know, I thought we had water issues around here. Why would you be sprinkling an Arroyo?
Good question.
I mean, it's insane.
Well, how much water do you think? So they're just sprinkling a gully?
Yeah, there's what looks like I haven't walked all the way down there, but it just looks like a big weed patch. And there's probably 15, 20 sprinkler heads that turn on around 7 a.m. and they don't shut off until about 6 p.m.
Any chance they're growing medicinal marijuana there?
I thought about that. And maybe it's for Wayne Hancock.
It could be. That's a good point. Anything else?
No, if you could find something out about I'd appreciate it.
Give us the location of it again.
It's the Arroyo off of Foothills and Roadrunner. It runs mostly along Foothills.
Huh, that's weird.
It's the big one where I guess they call it the dam.
Could they be trying to grow stuff in there to cut down on erosion?
No, this is way down in the bottom of it.
Wow, and that's
the other
weird.
The other thing is we got mosquitoes like crazy around here.
Oh, man. And they got Zika now.
Yep.
All right, well, try to find something out about it. Thanks for the call, Bill.
All right,
bye-bye. It's kind of weird. So this is text here. All right, so anyway, so they're, I don't know. I mean, you would think that they would get that under control, but it sounds like they're doing it on purpose. Here's the clip that could be the end, although I don't claim it is, but the end of Glenn Beck talking to Brad Thor about an extinction level event. What is that supposed to mean anyway? Sounds like nuclear Armageddon. But here's the back and forth.
This could bring down incredible heat on me because I'm about to suggest something very bad. It is a hypothetical I am going to ask you this week. With the speckless, spineless, constitutional if Congress is what patriot will step up and do if he oversteps his constitutional grand to stay as president. If he means available, I think it will be a terrible, terrible position the American people will be in to get Trump on.
Well, what I don't understand this. Barack Obama, in my opinion, has regularly stepped beyond the Constitution, and nobody has stood up to him. So. What, I don't understand this idea that all of these guys that are protesting Trump are epic conservatives who are fighting for the Republic. Like, this is like, you know, Cicero battling for the Republic against Caesar, you know, and Cicero finally gets killed. Cicero was beheaded. He was beheaded by, I'm sure it was the people that followed Caesar or whatever, but, you know what? Where's this idea that we've got this pure conservatism out there, and people like Bill Kristol and Glenn Beck are supporting it, and Brad Thor, whoever that is, sounds like a fake name, and Donald Trump has suddenly come up and he's ruined paradise, and now he's got to be killed. You know what? Look at McCain and look at Romney and try to make an argument that there was ever a pure conservatism in this country since Ronald Reagan. 6:32, we'll come back and talk to James Dickens about his run for the district attorney's office. I have tried and tried to get a hold of Mark D'Antonio. I may just give up. These two guys are supposed to have a debate, but we'll see if it happens. 6:32, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. All right, so we're back here at 6:36, the first day of June, and we've got James Dickens on the show. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. How's the campaign going?
I think it's going really well, going out into the community, getting lots of good responses, but you never know until the dust settles, so I'm really encouraging everybody to get out and vote, exercise their constitutional right.
And your contact information for your campaign?
Certainly. The easiest way to get a hold of me is my cell, which is 642-7300, or you can email me at dickens4da.com, and that 4 is the number 4, so dickens4da at gmail.com.
Now, do you know anything about the guy that was running on the, in the Republican? Is that guy still in the race?
Mr. Cates, as far as I know, he's still in the race. I have not spoken to him since he obviously hit the news here recently, but I don't see any reason why he's not still in the race at this time.
Okay, and so what do you want people to know about the campaign up to this point?
Well, we're really focused on being a voice for the victim in the community. We get out into the community and talk to victims, talk to people who are involved in law enforcement. All of them see their cases being pled down, dismissed, really light sentences going on, even for very serious cases. So we're trying to get out there and reestablish the fact that the district attorney's office is a voice for the victims in our community. We need to be the advocate for the victims in the courtroom and make sure that the victims' rights are protected in all of the cases.
Okay, and so did you want to go into any of the case histories or the situation in the department now that you think has maybe let the people down, according to, you know, in your opinion?
Sure. Let me give a real easy example. I think I had a domestic violence case come across my desk just last week. It was actually a couple out of Las Cruces. They'd gone up to Cloudcroft for a weekend. They had a dispute up there. The man ends up punching the woman in the face. It'd be a simple misdemeanor domestic violence case, but for the fact that he has 3 prior convictions for domestic violence, and so that makes it a felony here in the state of New Mexico. Looking at the case, started my investigation of the facts, interviewed the victim, and as is fairly common in domestic violence cases, the victim tells me, you know, this has never happened before, he didn't mean to hit me, it was an accident, basically recants the situation. I start looking into it, looking into those priors to see if she's been the victim before, anything of that nature. It turns out all the priors were with the man's ex-wives. But what I did discover was there was a case right here in Las Cruces that was currently pending, and lo and behold, it's the same thing, a domestic violence case between the same defendant and the same victim. I contact the prosecutor here in Las Cruces and remind him, hey, you know, this is a third offense, and therefore it should be a felony, and 6 months later you guys still have it charged as a misdemeanor. Get this charged as a felony, and let's start coordinating and see what we're going to do in both of our cases. The response I got from the prosecutor here in Las Cruces was that the victim was recanting, he didn't feel he could go forward, and therefore he was going to plead it out. And so he ended up pleading out that case to a misdemeanor and agreeing to time served, or basically probation. So incredibly light sentence. That wasn't acceptable, in my opinion, for somebody who's now committed domestic violence 5 times. So my plea offer was he had to plead to the felony, and the state wouldn't ask for more than 1 year. Give the victim a time to get away from her abuser and hopefully realize that she can have a wonderful life without this man in her life. Anyway, when he actually accepted my plea offer, because it is a reasonable plea offer, he shows up to court for the change of plea. And by then, he'd received the Doniana plea offer of misdemeanor and probation. And so his response to me was, you know what, I don't want your plea offer anymore, Mr. Dickens. I want the Doniana plea. In other words, I want it pled down to basically nothing and receive a slap on the wrist. So to me, that just epitomizes exactly the difference between the office as I see it and the office, obviously, as Mr. D'Antonio sees it.
So what happened in the case?
He rejected the plea offer. We're set for trial. We were actually supposed to go to trial yesterday, but we were, you know, 5th trial down on the docket, so we didn't go to trial. We'll set it again, and when it comes up, I'll go forward on it. And you can prosecute cases where the victim's recanting. You just have to look for evidence outside of what the victim is telling you. And there's plenty of evidence, both in the Doniana case as well as there was in this case. There was independent evidence. There was a 911 call. There was independent witnesses. So you can prosecute these cases, but you have to have the experience of going to court and going to trial in order to see how you can make these cases, even when the victim recants.
And so what message do you want to let people know about your approach to crimes against women, crimes against children?
Absolutely. You've got to take these seriously. When you see domestic violence, when you see child abuse, you've got to treat those basically as homicide prevention, because this man's not going to stop. This is his fifth time being brought into the court system on this same type of issue. He's not going to stop. He's clearly not learned from the prior attempts to rehabilitate him through therapy. So basically, you realize that that you've got to protect the victims, even if they aren't willing to protect themselves. And domestic violence, child abuse, the victims very often still are quite enamored. They love their abuser. Child abuse cases are some of the most heart-wrenching because they still love mom or dad or aunt and uncle or grandma and grandpa, whoever's their abuser. That's just the nature of human relationships.
Absolutely. Let's take a break. Talking to James Dickens, we've got a little weather here for you. And I was just looking at the Texas flood, USA Today. Texas floods deliver snakes, ants, debris to neighborhoods. So they're so much water there, they're just getting everything up out of the ground. So glad to be here. 642, 643 on the button. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450. And 805-6180 to text. We'll be back. Okay, we have James Dickens here, and he's running for DA. And James, there was a ethics violation claim that was filed by, was it your opposing, was it by Mark D'Antoni?
Yes, actually we had competing ethics complaints. I filed one on him for some of his campaign literature and how he was passing it out. And he filed one on me for making his stats public. There's quite frankly, nothing to it. The stats are public record, and no private information was in any way made public. So I look at that, and I see somebody who's just, quite frankly, has a record that he realizes he can't run on, and so he's trying to sling mud and hide the record. If his stats were great and his stats were something that was going to get him reelected, then he would have run his own stats and been plastering that all over town. So
he's, in other words, according to you, he's getting mad because you're telling the truth.
Absolutely. He doesn't want it out there. And we see this with all sorts of bureaucrats. We see this with big companies. When their dirty laundry is aired out to public scrutiny, all they can do, they can't go in there and say these stats are wrong. They can't go in there and say this is how we're going to change things. All they can do is go after the whistleblower and claim that the information shouldn't have been made public. But the idea that our public servants shouldn't be out there and people should know what's going on and how they're behaving while in office is just wrong.
So what did you find out in this investigation?
Looking at it, I looked at his top counts. These are the most serious counts in each case is your top count. And you put it on there because it is the most serious case, our serious charge. And so I'm looking at his top counts, and I find that he's only convicting as charged about 37% of his top counts. The rest, the 63% that are left, are being declined, dismissed, acquitted, or pled down to much lesser. And the pled downs are actually only about 17%. So the vast majority of his charges, just under 50%, are being declined, dismissed, or acquitted. So I don't see how your top counts basically being lost is making us a safer or healthier community.
So just break that down a little bit further. What exactly is happening, as far as you can tell, according to your study?
Right. Well, first, this is one of the things that sort of started me on the path of running for office. A lot of cases are being declined. I had officers who had been officers for a decade, and they called me and said, well, James, the same type of case I've been presenting for years is now being declined. And no information is being given back to them, no feedback as to why they're being declined. It's one thing if the new DA wants to sort of set a new standard or have a new type of investigation, but he's got to be able to communicate that to the officers. So simply declining a case without telling them why it's being declined, why it's insufficient, why it's not strong enough, why it's not acceptable, isn't making the community any safer. If you want the officers to do something, you got to talk to them. You got to communicate with them.
But isn't it the DA's own business why he doesn't want to take a case forward?
Yes and no. The community deserves to be protected. And so if you're simply declining cases without telling your law enforcement how to make them any better, how to improve them, how to make them acceptable, then all you're doing is, quite frankly, teaching your law enforcement to not bother, not even put in the effort. And that, to me, is unacceptable. You've got to have that open communication so that they know exactly what you expect them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they can give you some feedback as well as to why they can or cannot produce the case that you're asking for. If you want a confession before you take a case, then you're just not going to have that many cases to take.
Okay. And so, let's take a break here. We've got just one last row of beautiful ads to play. But AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and 805-618-02 text. And we have James Dickens on here, and we'll be right back to finish up. And I believe that Jeff Steinborn is going to be coming on. So we'll be right back. And it is outside right now. Your temperature is 60 degrees, so it's real nice. We'll be right back. All right, so bearing in mind that you claim from this study, I haven't seen the study, of course, but you claim that the records would tend to prove that the DA's office is deficient in bringing cases to trial and getting convictions, and that the DA, when they drop cases, don't tell the law enforcement why, what the policy is, whatever. Is the law enforcement supporting you?
Yes, I've had great enthusiasm from law enforcement out there. I went to all three of the local law enforcement unions, the Fraternal Order of Police, the retired officers, the Las Cruces Police Officers Association, as well as the Doñana County Sheriff's Union. All three of them have given me their endorsements unanimously. So that was a great encouragement going forward in this case, to see that law enforcement is out there. They're supporting a change. They've known me after working with me for since 1999. They know my dedication to law enforcement. They know my dedication to the victims, to this area. And they're out in force and supporting me. And that was a great encouragement.
There is some campaign literature that I saw that is associating you with the previous regime. Is your campaign being run by the governor's office?
Not at all. Those campaign ads, actually, that was one of the ethics complaints I filed, was those that when that ad first came out. What it shows is old office party photos. In fact, one of them you can tell I have a sort of a wet shirt on the bottom because it was a pool party. So, old office party photos. I haven't spoken to the governor since she became governor, but twice, and once was strictly related to a case. Her husband was a witness in that triple homicide that happened 5-6 years ago.
So you and the governor are not real tight?
No, not at all. I received another phone call from her during that time period when we adopted our fourth child. She's a big proponent of adoption, and that's it. But as far as running the campaign, financing the campaign, absolutely not. No contact regarding that.
And so, but I mean, you're not even in the same party as the governor.
No, not at all. I'm a Democrat. I have been a Democrat for 3 years now. And I'm sure that did not go over well, but you've got to follow your heart and you've got to make your choices and which party you believe supports your vision of the United States.
And you think that the Democratic Party is more committed to doing what?
Basically, the heart of a prosecutor is basically to protect those who cannot protect themselves. And looking at it, I looked at the two parties, and when you really boil it down, in my opinion, I think the Democratic Party protects those who can't protect themselves.
But somebody would turn around and say the current DA is a member of the Democratic Party and doesn't appear to be living out this vision that you claim is associated with it.
Yeah, I could understand that argument, but when you get down to it, being a prosecutor, you've got to not be afraid to go to trial. You've got to be afraid to push the case and to stand in front of the jury and support the victim through that. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, what if the victims aren't up to it? And we all have cases where the victims aren't up to going to court. But what you find once you've done this a couple hundred times like I have is that, in all honesty, the victims come out stronger if they go to court.
Because they stood up for themselves.
Absolutely. They now learn that somebody will support them, somebody will protect them, somebody will be an advocate for them. They come out the other side stronger. Even with bad verdicts, even with acquittals, I think the victims come out stronger.
Yeah, because they're not passive anymore. And we're almost out of time here, but the DA's office is essentially beyond party affiliation.
I think in a large part it is. I go out into the community. I talk to Republicans. I talk to Democrats. I talk to independents. I talk to those not otherwise specified, as they say. And what people want is a safe, healthy community.
Mm-hmm.
We might differ slightly on how much prison time to ask for, things like legalizing marijuana and so forth. But when it boils it down, it's, is it going to be a safer community? And the current district attorney's office is not making this a safer or healthier community.
So you're doing this to serve the community?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had victims reach out to me. I had officers reach out to me because they were concerned with where we were going. And when I'm walking door to door talking to the voters, I'm finding the same thing.
We have a phone call. Thanks for the call. We only have a few seconds. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom.
Just briefly.
Yeah, do you, I'd like to know from the gentleman, do you think the gun laws should be stricter in New Mexico?
Stricter gun laws in New Mexico?
The issue I had with gun laws was how difficult it is to get somebody on the no-sell list who has a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I would support that, making that stricter.
I think most people, if they knew someone was mentally ill. We've got another call. Thanks for the call. You've got 5 seconds. Hello. All right. If you call, speak. All right, folks. Thanks for coming in, James.
Thank you very much, Kelly.
Have a good day. All right, folks. We'll be back in theory with Jeff Steinborn. If not, we will carry on. You mess with her, you feel man. All right, so Jeff Steinborn, if you're listening, shame on you. No call, no show. Hopefully he's okay. Hopefully he didn't get in a wreck coming over here. But I think the last time Jeff was on the show, there was some pretty heated phone calls. So be that as it may, he is certainly always welcome on the show. Now, there's a very, very weird story here. Give you a little bit of weird news here, but there's some information out on Alzheimer's I wanted to give you, and then I wanted to get into the fine-tuned universe kind of for Weird Wednesday, just to let you think about it a little bit. It's some stuff I've been watching on YouTube. Alligators found eating human corpse in Florida.
Peculiar homicide investigation underway in Florida now after two alligators were reportedly found eating a human corpse. Two fishermen found the body in a canal on Monday. Even though police say it appears the alligators consumed part of the body, it's still being investigated as a homicide. A police captain told the Sun Sentinel the alligators aren't suspected of killing the person.
Could it be a homicide? Could it be a suicide? Could it have been natural? A fisherman? We don't know.
Officials say it looks like the body had been in the water for a while before it was found. They're currently working to identify the remains. For Newsy, I'm Samantha Crook.
All right, pretty weird, huh? And there was a crocodile attack in Australia where this is just really weird, but they blamed the woman for being stupid. That she took a risk and she was eaten by a crocodile, and then her friend tried to save her. Her friend could not save her, so she ended up taking one for the team. And let's see here. This is breaking news in Australia. This is a couple days ago. Hold on just a second here. And here is your woman eaten by crocodile story from Australia.
Who is missing this morning is aged in her 40s. We have heard a report that she may be a tourist from the UK, but that is yet to be confirmed. But it is feared this morning that she has been taken by a crocodile. She was swimming with a friend last night at Thornton Beach near Cape Tribulation, which is about 140 kilometres north of Cairns.
It's Kelly.
It's an area where the water is heavily populated with crocodiles. And this friend said she saw the woman being dragged under the water and that she was yelling out she's been taken by a crocodile.
Who is this?
Chuck.
Okay. All right. Well, let's put it on the air. I've got a phone call for Jeff Steinborn, who did not make it today. But Chuck, you had a question for him. Let's put it out there anyway.
Yes, sir. Okay. Mr. Steinborn, as everybody knows, is very big on the environment and ecology. And he's very, very much against the extractive industries, oil, gas drilling, timber, mining. As that may be, okay, in some ways it may be good, but money for education in this state comes mainly from taxes placed on the extractive industries.
Yes.
If Mr. Steinborn has his way, the extractive industries will be greatly reduced in the state. The income from them will be greatly reduced. And I would like to know what his plans are. How is he going to replace that money?
I have found, and I can't really speak for Jeff, but I would say that, and I don't know if Jeff Steinborn claims to be a socialist or whatever. I know that he is works for the Wilderness Alliance, doesn't he?
He's involved with a lot of organizations.
Well, he has a job with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, I believe. Anyway.
I think his job is with that local group down here on the downtown.
All right. Let me look it up.
I can't remember their name.
I think that Jeff used to, maybe I'm mistaken, but it seemed to me like he used to work for the Wilderness Alliance. I've got his Wikipedia page here, and it doesn't really say. I think at one time, if not still currently, he worked for the Wilderness Alliance. But anyway, he's an advocate for environmentalism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So anyway, go on.
He does not want more drilling. He doesn't want mining. He's against cutting timber. And this is where the money comes from education. So how does he plan to replace that income? And that would have been my question for him today.
All right, so this is what I would have to say. A lot of times in these people or movements that are, whether they're environmental or socialist, whatever, there is not a plan B. I mean, there is a certain amount of, you know, speculation on where the income will be replaced. But there's a lot of people, I'm not saying Jeff is part of this group, there's a lot of people who want to see the world shrink in terms of population. They want the population down to what they consider to be a sustainable, which is about 500 million people. So we're talking about getting rid of somehow, either through attrition or some other way, 5 billion people, 6 billion people. We're talking about and shrinking economies so that we don't harm the earth. This is a plank in modern environmentalism. Groups that believe in rewilding, bringing wild animals back and you know, shrinking down the area where people live. And the economy has to be shrunk because capitalism is inherently harmful to the earth. That's what these people believe. I don't know if Jeff believes that, but from what you're saying, he might.
No, my approach was going to be very, very narrow. How are you going to replace the bucks? And what is your plan? That was it.
Well, if we can get him back on the show, we can address these issues.
Well, I hope he would come in because it's a serious question. Like I said, it is strictly, my outlook is strictly the money for education. And I'm not looking into greater objectives beyond that. You'll lose money from the extractive industries. How are you going to replace it? What is your plan?
What if there is no plan?
Then, to me, that would be a mark against him because you would have to have a plan. Otherwise, you're damaging the education system in the state, which I would think he would support.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that Jeff supports education, but I mean, there are winners and losers. And I think that if you're going to radically impact the economy, there's going to be a loser.
Yeah. So, but you know, if you're going to work towards something, you have to have a plan. I want to know what his plan is.
All right,
is.
Look, let me just counteract that with the, one of the most spectacular features of communism in history, Marxism. Marx launched a critique of capitalism. It's very famous. But what he did not offer, he laid out all the problems with capitalism. He did not offer, except in very broad terms, a replacement for capitalism. So when the Marxists, who were extraordinarily self-righteous and angry people, took over Russia and they took over China, there was not a plan B. There was no way. So for example, when Chairman Mao nationalized all the farms, he took all of the farmers off the farms and put them in communes. There was no model that they were following. It was just to stick them on communes. And then the net impact was 40 million people dying. But there was no plan. And as a matter of fact, Chairman Mao said, we don't have a plan. Can someone help us out? I mean, he really said that.
Yeah.
And now with Leninism, Lenin was running. He was the head of the Russian Revolution. He gets into power. And the reason Lenin is important to Marxists is because he was the guy who actually had to try to figure out how to take Marxism as a theory and apply it to society. And what they found out is it didn't work and they had to pull back. Stalin did the same thing. He applied pure communism,
yeah,
and it didn't work, and they had to pull back. And they were very bitter over these failures. But so there is no plan B in communism.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
I've read history, and I'm aware of everything you're saying. But my whole thing is to keep it basic, simple, and narrow.
And I'm not saying that Jeff Steinbrenner is a communist or even a socialist. No. All I know is the people on the left tend to be influenced by these thinkers.
Yeah. Well, I still would like to hear from him what how he plans to replace that money and what the effects of it would be. And I would like to hear it from him.
Absolutely, instead of my speculation.
I've spoken to the man. Jeff Steinbrenner's a nice guy.
He's a real nice guy.
But I just don't agree with some of the things he believes in. I love his support for veterans, but I worry about a lot of other things.
Yeah, and I think you're putting across very, very well your problems.
Yeah. Well, I hope he comes on, and I hope that I'm able to listen when he does, because I would like to ask him that question.
All right. Okay, well, let's try to get him on.
Okay, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Good morning.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, folks. I have no idea what Jeff believes. So, I mean, that's why you want people to come on a show and talk. But I do know, I've known very, very, very many people on the left. To this day, I have friends that are on the left, and I know where their ideas come from, even if they don't, because I've kind of studied this. Anyway, I always find it kind of feels weird to talk about communism and Marxism, because it makes, to me, it sounds fanatical to talk about it, you know? All right. Has science discovered the roots of Alzheimer's? This is from Watch It News. This is a little teaser, but I've got some information, and I believe one in eight. I was talking to my sister a couple of days ago. One in eight people is going to get Alzheimer's. So there's a new theory out there.
Earlier this week, Harvard University Research Group published a study where they believe that they may have found the root of Alzheimer's disease. The focus on the study is amyloid beta proteins, which form beta amyloid plaques. Beta amyloid plaques are found in individuals with Alzheimer's brain and are the culprit in the loss of memory. They link brain infection and amyloid beta proteins, which allows for the possibility of creating a more effective treatment plan for Alzheimer's patients.
All right, so what my sister was telling me was that there was the belief that there was a connection between infections and Alzheimer's. So, but here's another clip for you from PBS, May 28th, 2016.
Now to new, potentially breakthrough research in Alzheimer's disease that some are calling revolutionary. More than 5 million Americans live with a degenerative brain disease that robs people of their memory. It is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. A study led by Harvard University researchers and published this week in the journal Science Translational Medicine suggests that Alzheimer's could stem from the brain's past attempts to fight off infections. Joining me now from Boston to explain these findings is one of the study's authors, Rob Moya. He's an assistant professor in neurology at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Rob, thank you so much for joining us during a very big week for you and for those watching Alzheimer's. Tell us what your research shows.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So Alzheimer's disease and the neurodegeneration you see with it is thought to be caused by a little protein that forms this concrete-like substance in your brain called amyloid. Amyloid, it turns out, is actually an antimicrobial peptide. That is to say, it's a natural antibiotic that defends against infection in the brain. And if you get a virus or a bacterium that gets into the brain, A beta rises to do battle with it and binds to it and then entraps it in these long fibrils and eventually entombs it forever. And as they mount in number, eventually they start to be toxic to our own cells, and that leads to the neurodegeneration. So that's what A beta does. Why is it important? Well, what our work doesn't say this directly, but what it certainly is very provocative in terms of suggesting is that there is an infection in AD, maybe low level, maybe many different pathogens creeping into the brain, and A beta form this amyloid around them, and this is what drives the disease.
What do you think, though, that this could hold promise for? Is it more promising for finding a treatment for those who have Alzheimer's, or is it more promising for those to identify who might be at risk, or both?
Well, it is actually both. So if it does turn out to be an infection, there's a possibility of treating people before they get AD with vaccines to target those particular bugs so that the pathogens don't get a chance to infect the brain.
Are there some of us who have naturally more of these amyloids or more of this defense system that kicks in than others? Could that help explain why some might be more prone to Alzheimer's than others? I know there's often talk of a genetic link as well to Alzheimer's.
Certainly. It's like any inflammation response. Genetics plays a big part, so does environmental factors. And we all have a beta amyloid in our brains. Once you turn 40, you start to develop the stuff. But some people seem to get it much faster. That could be driven by their genetics. They have a hair trigger when it comes to immunity. Or it could be driven by the fact that they're getting more pathogens sneaking into their brain. And there could be a number of reasons for that.
Well, we will definitely be paying close attention.
Pretty interesting stuff, huh? All right, let's take a little break here, and we're going to come back and get into the fine-tuned universe. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and 805-61802 text. And Jeff Steinborn, MIA, missing in action. Jeff, call the mothership. Let's reschedule. 7:23, we'll be right back. In the Tiger Temple in Kachanburi Province in Thailand, they found 40 tiger cubs frozen in the freezer. And this is this place where stupid foreigners come to pat passive tigers and take pictures with them and play with tiger cubs. And they were going to shut this place down because they were supposedly the monks there were selling off the parts. Well, there goes 40 tiger cubs. But all right, here's a woman killed by fire ants in Alabama. You know that hurt.
The grief weighing on Sheila Rowland's shoulders is almost too much to bear.
Having to bury two people, even on both sides, trying to come up with money is hard.
Her daughter-in-law, Kaylin Rowland, was in Selma last Friday, making funeral arrangements for her mother, Roberta Lynn, who had died just the day before. Family members say she was on a haystack talking with someone on the phone when she was attacked.
The ants started coming out and started getting all over, and she came off the haystack, and my son said he grabbed him, he took him, but he couldn't save her.
According to family members, Kaylin is severely allergic to fire ants and started swelling to the point where she couldn't breathe.
She died in my son's arms. Right now, you know, and then having to save her mother too.
The 29-year-old leaves behind a husband and two young boys.
I wish I could do more for him. I wish I could take that load off of him.
Kaylin's best friend remembers the good times.
She'd be in a really bad mood, but she'd always laugh at me and tell me, "You crazy girl."
And urges anyone with severe allergies to get an EpiPen.
There's just nothing really that you can do. Nothing.
Well, I wonder how you find out you're allergic to fire ants anyway. All right, that's pretty tragic there. All right, let's take a little break and come back and get into the fine-tuned universe. All right, the fine-tuned universe is the idea that the universe was, well, that there are so many variables that are work together to create life on Earth, that it's that people claim that it's proof of God. But anywhere here, here's Paul Davies. I've got a number of his books. I'm not saying I've read a number of his books, but I've got them. He's not a Christian, but he writes about stuff like, you know, God and the universe and everything. He's kind of an interesting guy. He's kind of a little more neutral. You get two sides, group of people that argue that the fine-tuning in the universe means that there's a God, and then there's another group that are quite vociferous and even angry, saying that it doesn't mean anything like that. And their answer to the problem is the multiverse, meaning there's an infinite number of universes out there, which is hard to imagine when the universe itself that we know of, the visible universe, is 100 billion galaxies with 100 billion stars on average in each one. And that is only 1/200. The universe is 250 times bigger, the whole universe, than that. So how could, you know, anyway. Getting into it. Here's Paul Davies.
Postulation of a multiverse and the anthropic principle to select from it because we're here, does that eliminate the possibility of a supernatural being, a God?
Part of the motivation for introducing the multiverse explanation for the biological fine-tuning of the universe was to finally get rid of God, because the explanation that the universe is so fit for life because God made it that way just appeared anathema to many scientists, certainly many cosmologists. But I have to say, But I know religious scientists who are very comfortable with the idea of multiverse and a God. I mean, they say that, well, if you've got this God who is all-powerful, then why can this God not make an infinite number of universes?
All right, so here is I want to move to another clip, because I want to just get into this argument as fast as we can. The idea that there are a number of there's a number of things that involve the place that we're living at right now, Earth and our solar system, that make life livable. And there's hundreds of them. There's like 200 or 300 of them. If you if you changed even one of them, would exterminate life. That's the claim. So then the argument then kind of came up that basically, how could that be a coincidence? And people who studied cosmology then, and as you just heard Paul Davis right there say, the reason that they came up with the multiverse, the idea that there's an infinite number of hidden universes, is to suggest that this was the way the dice fell in this one, because there's an infinite number of universes, that it's just pure chance. Because to say that this is the only universe and it's fit for life seems to suggest to many people that there's a God. So anyway, here's fine-tuning the universe.
Regardless of whether or not they believe in God, most scientists agree the cosmic code appears to exist.
Everything in the universe is determined by the fundamental forces of nature. The strengths of those forces are characterized by numbers called fundamental constants that are so sensitive that if they changed by just a little bit, the universe as we know it wouldn't be here. For example, if the rate of expansion of the universe right after the Big Bang had changed by one part in a quintillion is one with 18 zeros after it, the universe would continue to expand or collapse back on itself, and none of this would be possible. To illustrate just how small a number one part in a quintillion is, imagine all the grains of sand on this beach. In fact, imagine all the grains of sand in all the world's beaches. That number's probably somewhere around a quintillion. In this analogy, if all that sand represented the rate of expansion of the universe right after the Big Bang, how many grains of sand would I need to add or subtract to wreck the universe? Just one grain, one in a quintillion. That's how precise things had to be for us to be here.
But even though the Big Bang was perfectly calibrated, intelligent life would never have formed if matter had spread evenly across the universe.
Had it been perfectly smooth, then there wouldn't be any clumps which would gravitate and form stars and galaxies. So we needed slight irregularities in the distribution of matter in the universe.
I want to point out one thing. There's a gentleman that was involved, and he's still around, but he was involved with the scientific work that was put into trying to understand the Big Bang. And one of the things that he said, and I just saw a clip on this the other day, he said that when the Big Bang happened, gravity was inverted. It was turned off. I just wanted to add that in there. It's another fascinating idea. It was turned off, and so instead of all of the matter staying together, it spread out, because we know that gravity brings bodies together, or there is a the reason that things fall. You knock something off the shelf, it falls on the ground, is because of gravity, because the Earth is drawing this body down. But during the Big Bang, gravity was basically turned upside down. Kind of a fascinating idea.
Had those irregularities been much smaller, stars and galaxies wouldn't have formed. Had they been much larger, everything would have collapsed to form black holes.
But even with the right distribution of matter throughout the universe, life would still never have formed. without a complex series of processes inside stars that converted helium and hydrogen into heavier elements like carbon that form the basis of all living beings.
Some of those stars explode, providing raw material with which to form new stars, planets, and ultimately life. Had the laws of physics been a little bit different, or even if the physical constants had been a little bit different from what they really are, this process of nuclear fusion and the explosion of stars might not have been possible, and we wouldn't be here discussing it.
I don't know a single scientist who would disagree with the statement that the world is exceedingly ingenious. Not just mathematical, not just beautiful, not just elegant, but the manifestation of something truly extraordinary.
Let's take a little break here. Anyway, this is kind of a complex thing, but I thought you might find it fascinating. The idea that the universe appears to have been put together somehow. If not, there's an extraordinary number of coincidences. It's called the fine-tuned universe thesis, and against that, the multiverse was put out there. 7:41 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. Okay, so I've listened to a number of videos on why the universe is not finely tuned, or why that's a mistaken idea, and it's amazing the number of astrophysicists or people working in this area will just say, basically, the question of God doesn't have anything to do with this, and in addition, they'll say things like, they'll just kind of like throw the idea out, baby with the bathwater kind of thing. But anyway, here's a little more fine-tuning of the universe.
Some respects as though our universe is rather special. We know the universe allowed our emergence, but it's quite easy to imagine a universe with slightly different properties in which neither we nor anything as complicated as us could exist. We can imagine, as it were, turning the knobs, which were set up at the time of the Big Bang to determine how it expanded and what it was made of. And if we turn the knob very slightly, we find that we would end up with a universe that would not be so propitious for the emergence of life.
Take gravity, perhaps the most familiar of the laws of nature. Its value determines how much things are attracted to each other. From us being stuck to the Earth circling our Sun, to the stars held in place in remote galaxies billions of light years away. Just the tiniest adjustment to the value of gravity in a computer simulation of the Big Bang, and our universe doesn't emerge at all.
For example, if gravity were very strong, then anything as big as us would get crushed. There were no gravity at all, then no stars would be able to form because they're held together by gravity. No planets either.
And the other laws are equally fine-tuned. Any slight adjustment to their value, and we would never exist. There is no known reason why these values should be set as they are, yet they do seem to be fine-tuned to allow our creation.
For some of us, not all, for some of us, it looks like we have to live with the idea that the constants of nature, the laws of nature, everything that we know about, somehow was influenced by our own existence. This is something which physicists hate the idea of. Most physicists want the world to be controlled by pure mathematics, not by our own existence.
For a while, mainstream cosmologists were content that once we understood better the underlying reason for the laws being set as they are, fine-tuning would no longer seem so mystical and would once again fall within the realms of physics and mathematics.
The general view of this for most physicists is that these fine-tunings are largely accidental, that the constants of nature are determined by some mathematical principles which have nothing whatever to do with our existence. Impersonal, mathematical, and we were just incredibly lucky that that mathematics happened to give rise to a universe with all this kind of fine-tuning, just precisely so.
All right, we'll take one last break here and come back and finish up with the fine-tuning of the universe. Pretty fascinating stuff, though, isn't it? Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and 805 6180 to text. We will be back. There's a guy by the name of Paul Steinhardt. He is the Albert Einstein Princeton physicist, Albert Einstein professor in science. He says of the multiverse that basically our universe has a simple natural structure. The multiverse idea is baroque, unnatural, untestable, and in the end dangerous to science and society. Kind of interesting. Here is his statements about the Big Bang. What was the Big Bang?
If the Big Bang were an explosion, think about what happens when you have an ordinary explosion. First of all, there's going to be a center to that explosion. And you're going to know there's a center to that explosion because as everything leaves the center of the explosion, things which are more massive are not going to travel as far as the things that are less massive. So, in fact, when we try to understand after an explosion where the center of the explosion was, that's what we do. We look around at the shrapnel and we ask, how is it distributed? We can reconstruct the center of it. If you believe that was true about the Big Bang, we should find that massive galaxies are traveling more slowly than less massive galaxies, and we should be able to reconstruct the center. That is not what's happening in the Big Bang model. It turns out the motion of galaxies doesn't depend upon their mass at all. Their apparent motion only depends upon how far away they are. So what's really a better picture of what you're talking about is space stretching. So if space is stretching uniformly, what's in that space, whether it's massive or not massive, moves away from us due to the stretching by the same amount. In fact, it moves, appears to you, move by an amount which, you know, if you're stretching uniformly, the farther away it is, in the same amount of time, it seems to move farther than the nearby stuff. So in other words, if you stretch by a factor of two, things that are 1 meter away end up 2 meters away. But things that were, say, 10 meters away look 20 meters away. So it looks like they've moved 10 times as far, I mean, much farther in the same amount of time. That's actually what we observed. That's what Hubble observed. He observed that distant galaxies, doesn't depend upon their mass, but depending upon their distance, seem to have a recessional speed, a speed away from us, that's proportional to their distance. That corresponds to a stretch. So what the Big Bang should really be called is the Big Stretch. That and what's big about it is at the very beginning, it's a very rapid stretch, and then that stretch for the next period of substantial period of time has been stretching ever more slow rate.
Sounds like a stretch to me. But then again, I'm not a nuclear physicist, or a cosmologist. So anyway, finely tuned universe. We'll just go back over the idea. The finely tuned universe is that there are a number of, let's say, hundreds and hundreds of different variables that are set in the universe that they're basically affecting life as we know it, the quality of life, the environment, and everything. And they are, some of them are at micro, you know, little tiny things, and others are giant ones, and they all affect this solar system that we're in the universe. And the claim is out there that all of this happening by accident is impossible. So according to Paul Davies, who's written a number of books, and he's a British cosmologist, he's kind of, you know, dumbs things down so people like you and I can understand it. And he said that basically the reason that the multiverse theory was brought up in the first place is to explain this incredible set of coincidences that hundreds and hundreds of variable equations and variable, you know, forces and such are put out in a way that is ultimately beneficial to life. And with so many different variables, they could have been one way or another, but they're this way in the mix. The chances of it happening accidentally are infinitesimally small. So therefore, we have postulate an infinite number of universes out there that you can't see, you can't test, you can't feel. There's no evidence of them. But they answer a crucial question to modern cosmology, which is how do you explain the existence of the universe without God? So that's what Paul Davies is saying, and I think that's eminently reasonable. Finely tuned universe, how did we get this? Is it all sheer luck? Is there a deity out there that has put it together? Anyway, I was planning on doing a full show on this, but since our beloved Jeff Steinborn did not show up, no call, no show, I decided to stick that in the gap. So an hour's worth of, well, really a half an hour of Finely Tuned Universe. But you have to admit, it's pretty fascinating stuff. And if you go onto YouTube, then you can pick this stuff up, just put in Finely Tuned Universe. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we will get some more. I've got Pablo Martinez coming on tomorrow. Hey, by the way, there's a story out there in the Daily Mail is storm chasing out of control. They're saying adrenaline junkies causing traffic chaos with these vehicles driving into deadly storms. And in May, there were 120 tornadoes, some of them absolutely spectacular across 10 states. But there is a problem because there is now like there's a pileup of all these storm chasers trying to get videos and pictures of these astounding storm events so that they can sell them and pass them into the media. And one is called Base Hunters. A Facebook page has more than 50,000 fans, so it's very, very popular. Watch out for storm chasers. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and we'll come back and see you tomorrow. We'll do it again in 22 hours. Ciao.